Tape from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
Hey, John, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Darren?
Doing all right. Doing okay in the summer heat. Hot time, summer
That's
in the
right.
city.
It's like 90 degrees here in New Jersey.
Breaking my neck and dirty gritty.
Yeah.
Cool down.
All around the people looking half dead.
Yeah. Is
it been, something, no. something sidewalk hotter than a match head.
Match head. I've heard that song 100 times. I still don't know all the words to it.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. I'm not good. It shows.
So,
yeah, I'm just trying to think of something else to talk about other than the movie we're about to talk about. And, like that segue?
Yes, I did. I did. Very much
right.
so.
I'm the best in the biz. Yeah. So, today we're going to talk about the, infamously, not great movie, It's Pat, the movie.
Yes, I didn't realize until this morning that the title is not just It's Pat, it's Pat the Movie.
That's right.
It's, yeah, so it's, it gives it a lot of import.
Does that change things for you and your viewpoint of it?
Maybe, I don't know, I guess.
Okay. All right, I mean, for those that don't know, this movie came out in August 26, 1994, and... Yeah.
And closed September 7th, 1994.
Yeah, it did. I mean, for those that don't know,
it did not do well, people.
It did not do well. Just to give you an example. Well, for one thing, this is one of the few movies that has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
0%.
You know,
0.0.
I need
you like that?
Yes, it was an Animal House GPA.
Nice.
I should get the reviews up on from Rotten Tomatoes they were good.
Yeah, yeah. So this movie had a budget of $8 million, and for some reason, this is another thing that struck me peculiar. This movie was in limited release, which for an SNL movie is kind of odd. Like, this movie only came out in 3 cities.
Have you seen the movie? It's not that odd.
No, it's true, but I mean, like, for an SNL movie, because it's SNL, it should be, like, a bigger budget, but I guess the people that put it out didn't have faith in it, and, deservedly so, because in its first weekend, on an $8 million budget, first weekend, $60,000.
Yeah.
Or, you know, $60,822.
Yeah. It didn't do well.
Yeah.
Guys.
And so much so that its opening weekend was its only weekend.
Yeah.
Because they pulled the movie out of theaters right after that. So if you didn't see the movie that weekend, you just didn't see it.
Yeah, no, I'd never seen this movie before. You, I'm assuming, had not seen this movie before.
I have not. I mean, mainly because... Well, let's go back a bit. Like, let's
give a little background to Pat and the character, because we haven't explained the basic circumstances of Pat.
Right. So Pat is this character portrayed by Julia Sweeney,
mm-hmm.
who's this sort of androgynous person.
Mm-hmm.
Being very careful.
The basic joke behind Pat is... This person's gender is unclear. No one can tell if Pat is a man or a woman.
Right.
And it causes much confusion, and that was the joke from the sketch.
Yeah.
And they expand that joke out into an hour, 17 minutes.
Yeah, this movie's super short, too. It's only an hour, it's not even an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But it felt longer, but we'll get to that.
It did. It did.
But, yeah, I mean, as far as the sketch goes, whenever it came on, when it was on SNL in late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. I never... dug the sketch that much. Every time It's Pat came on,
it
I was
got
like,
old really fast.
And
they did it a lot because I guess it was a hit sketch. I mean, it they did it like 14 times on the show.
14?
14 times, and this is in the space of about 3 years.
God.
So that's, I mean, you're doing it like, I'm assuming something like every 3 weeks or something.
Were people really clamoring for It's Pat?
I don't know, but...
I don't remember people...
By the way, the Wikipedia page on Pat, the character, not It's Pat the movie... it is extensive.
It is flush with information.
It has a breakdown of every single It's Pat sketch. And wow, somebody is very passionate about Pat or just had way too much time on their hands. But it tells you more about Pat the character than you would ever want to know.
It was probably Charles Rocket's character in Pat the movie.
Yeah, it probably was when he was going.
Which we will get to.
So yeah, so in It's Pat the movie, we have Pat.
Yeah.
the man slash woman. I feel like to ease the talking of the character, maybe we should each just choose a pronoun to apply to Pat. I could say he, you could say she.
Oh,
and then we're covering our bases.
Interesting. I was just going to say Pat. Just
well, I mean, you can,
but I feel like I'd forget.
Okay,
but I'll say she or Pat.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I will stay with he, so we'll just cover our bases.
There we go.
You know, by the way, just general disclaimer at the beginning. We're two heterosexual dudes.
Yeah.
In our 40s.
Yeah.
We do our best to be woke about this stuff.
That's right. I'm trying, man.
We tried. We really wanted to get like an LGBT comedian to come in as a
we
guest
did, but,
in here, but it didn't work out.
But we're gonna do our best to be sensitive to all
right
everything.
But let's just give a little preemptive problematic bell right at the beginning here.
That's there right. There we go. Happy Pride Week, everybody. Yeah. Pride Month. Is it a month or a week?
I've been hearing both. I think it's actually Pride Month, but maybe there's a Pride Week where it's the pride is extra concentrated. I don't know.
Like orange juice?
Yes.
All right. Happy Pride Week, month, year. Happy Pride, period.
Happy Pride.
There you go. All right.
There you go.
Stay woke.
We're just two cis males doing the best we can.
We're trying.
All right.
So I mean, as far as the sketch goes, I was never a fan of it. So when the movie came out, I was like, I don't like the sketch character. Why would I watch the movie?
Yeah. And I think that's what most of America said.
That's what most of America said. Yeah. Because as I said before, first weekend, $60,000.
And it's honestly, it's a weird choice of a character to build a whole movie around because
Hans and Franz is right there. Or was
how
right
did
there.
They never do a Hans and Franz movie?
I think that the story.
What the hell?
I think that the story behind
they wrote a script at least.
Yeah,
right?
Like they were trying to do it, but never came to fruition.
That's
but
a shame. That could have been a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, but now
it's Pat is not a good movie.
It is not.
And I really realized. I mean, for one thing, we just have the one joke. We have the is Pat a man or a woman?
Yeah,
which is. It hardly sustains over 5 minutes. It really is not going to sustain
over an hour.
Yeah.
And plus, the two things I didn't... Well, a couple of things I didn't like about it is, like, there's no real plot here. I mean, the main plot is, like, Pat is kind of hopping from job to job trying to...
Right.
Yeah.
Pat can't commit
to a job and...
Or a gender. No, actually, that's an unfair... generalization because Pat knows what Pat's gender is.
Right.
The thing is that nobody else can figure out what Pat's gender is. To Pat, it's perfectly evident.
Exactly.
So Pat personally has no confusion.
Right. It's just
over his her gender.
Right. It's just society is confused by it.
Right.
And
disturbed.
And disturbed and just felt awkward and
it's a weird character to build a movie around because Pat is not a good person or a nice person and is a creepy person.
Yeah, that's the other thing I didn't like about it. Like, Pat...
I mean, just in terms of personality. I'm not talking about the gender thing. It's
No. Pat, like... I mean, well, first of all, Pat has that speech impediment where Pat kind of goes... Like, it's very... Yeah, Pat has a very kind of whiny type of...
It gets very grating
kind of
very quickly.
Mucusy voice at sometimes where... And also, Pat's personality isn't... Pat is very, like, sort of self-involved and almost narcissistic at some point.
Yeah. There's a point, at one point, in late in the movie, Pat gets a job as a radio advice host.
Right.
Where people call in and ask Pat for advice.
Because she took Pat's friend's job.
Yeah. She took Kathy's job.
Oh, yeah, Kathy Griffin's in this movie.
Kathy Griffin is in this movie, by the way, playing a character named Kathy Griffin.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
They didn't even bother to give her a new name.
They're just like, what should Kathy Griffin's character be named? Kathy Griffin.
Done.
It's just, they did not care.
Just any last, just change the last name at very least.
I was like, Kathy Griffin's playing a character named Kathy. And then late in the movie, they call her, she says, I'm Kathy Griffin. And I'm like, okay.
All right. I guess that's a choice.
So Pat takes over Kathy Griffin's radio show, and then someone calls into the radio show and says that they have a terminal disease, and Pat calls them a crybaby.
Yeah,
and it's like you don't get behind Pat as a protagonist at any point in this movie, because Pat is not a person that you can root for.
No.
Like, Pat is just very oblivious and very inconsiderate, and just your sympathies are not on Pat's side.
No, she's very like self-absorbed and self-involved and everything about Pat. And but like, so you have somebody like that with that voice and just kind of is like, I don't, there's nothing to like.
So, okay, let's back up a little bit. We got sidetracked summarizing the plot of the movie. We've got Pat. Pat is bouncing from job to job. Pat falls in love with another person of unclear gender named Chris, played by Dave Foley.
Dave Foley.
Who I have met, by the way.
Oh!
I'll tell that story later on.
Dave wasn't rude to you at a Lakers game?
No, he was not. Okay. He was not. Dave was very nice.
Put a pin in that.
Dave is playing a character named Chris, who's, it's unclear if Chris is a man or a woman.
Right.
And Dave Foley certainly has lots of experience of doing drag from Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Dave has some good lines in this one, too. Like, where they, when they first meet and go on their first date, Chris is like, you know what I like? And I was like, oh, do you like movies? It's like, yeah, I like movies. You know what I like? I like good movies.
I was like, so yeah, do I. Me too.
I like good movies.
But unfortunately, I'm watching this thing.
Oh, zingaroo.
Well, I mean, it's right there. It's too self-referential to really work as a gag. And then we also have Charles Rocket, who is another SNL alum. He's from the infamous 1980-81 season where he was in the first cast that was replacing the original cast.
Yeah, they were trying to make him the new Chevy Chase.
Or the Chevy
Chase. Chevy Chase.
That's a good vehicle, good mileage, nice, reliable.
The 1984 Chevy Chase.
and he plays Pat's neighbor, Kyle.
Yes, him and his wife just moved in across the hall from where Pat is. And Kyle becomes very obsessed over finding out Pat's gender.
Right.
Like, to the point of obsession. And
to the point where it ruins his marriage.
Yeah, he ruins his marriage. His wife leaves him, but he's dressing up as Pat, and he's, like, taking pictures of Pat while Pat doesn't know it. And
yeah, yeah.
It becomes very creepy, stalkery.
Yeah.
Single white female type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, by the way, the apartment building complex is named the Villa Obscura.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was one of the few cutish jokes in there.
Yeah. There are some jokes that are cutish, but nothing really funny.
A lot of things that just you don't really recognize as jokes. I watched most of this thing stone faced.
There was one joke I kind of liked where there's one point where Pat takes a job as a sous chef.
Yeah.
And Pat's boss talks to another Japanese couple.
Yeah.
And the couple asking,
and this is subtitled.
Yeah. And it's subtitled because they're speaking Japanese. And the couple saying, "Hey, is that person like a man or a woman?" Mm-hmm. And then Pat's boss says, "Well, you know, I was confused at first too, but then I followed Pat into the restroom and saw that she's, and before you can see what he's saying because it's subtitled, somebody steps in front of the subtitles so you can't see what else he's saying."
Yeah.
And then, of course, they continue, and the couple saying, "Oh, that's what I thought she was. How could I not see it?"
Yeah.
So I was like, "Oh, that's kind of clever the way they did."
Oh, that was cute. That was cute. If there'd been more humor in that vein, I wouldn't have minded it.
Yeah, but there was not more. There was less.
and it's a surprisingly gross movie. I mean, in that scene you were just talking about, Pat sneezes on the food.
Yeah,
he's preparing and
just serves
and
it to
serves
the person.
It up and like Pat spits on people at other places.
Yeah, by accident. Pat like sneezes on Chris's face at one point by accident. And it's like, what's the point of that?
And it's just like, how is this? I don't know.
Are you okay?
The first shot of the movie is inside a fallopian tube, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Of Pat being born.
Yeah.
And then
dropped on the floor by accident.
Right. And then the doctor is called out, and Pat's mother is saying, "Oh, is it a boy or a girl?" And the doctor's like, "Ah, I got to go. You figure it out."
As doctors are wont to do.
Sure, sure.
And it's like, oh, it's a Pat.
And Pat is also, just because of the makeup and you know, the cringy thing, Pat is a disturbing character to see in close-up. Pat was not built for close-ups.
No.
Because it's Julia Sweeney, and, you know, she's, of course, she's in this shapeless fat suit.
Right.
And she has like very unappealing makeup. She's got this sort of Brillo pad afro thing. Got
the Eugene Levy eyebrows.
Yeah. And the thick glasses. And her face is sort of scrunched up, very pinched. And it's, you don't like looking at Pat.
No.
And for a long time.
And then there's hearing Pat and then her Pat's personality.
I mean, can you imagine seeing this on a big screen?
Ah!
It was disturbing. I was watching it on my laptop. It was disturbing enough just to watch it on my laptop.
No, you got to fingernail that thing.
That was,
make that thing smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was it's just like...
Yeah, it's a very cringy movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about voices before, because when we talked about the Coneheads movie, like Beldar and Primate have that thing with their voice too.
Yeah.
It's very kind of like...
They're also grating voices to hear.
And like sometimes you can pull that off if the character is likable enough. I was thinking about it, like Steve Urkel. He has that type of voice, you know, hello, hiney, ho.
Yeah.
But he's also kind of charming enough to be endearing. But like with Beldar and Pat, they're not endearing. They're just, it's more annoying.
I definitely got behind Beldar more than I got behind Pat.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's true.
I mean, you know, like early in the movie, like Pat's first job is a mail carrier, and Pat's like opening everybody's mail.
Yeah.
And it's like, you never get behind Pat
as
a character. You're never rooting for Pat. You're never.
Yeah. I mean, because Pat is the hero or the lead in the movie, feel like you're supposed to because they're the lead, but you never do. I never did. Like Pat was just like, all right, you're a terrible person and you're opening mail and you think it's cool and you're just kind of oblivious to the fact that you're super rude to everybody.
That, by the way, that reminds me of one of the Rotten Tomatoes reviews is one joke Saturday Night Live based comedy. Yuck! that was Steve Crum from the Kansas City Kansan. Here's another one from Scott Weinberg. Patently atrocious in every conceivable way.
Sounds about right.
This one from Oz is, I can't even dignify this film with a review.
Wow.
And here's my favorite. Ken Hankey from Mountain Express in Asheville, North Carolina is just, dear God.
Wow, that is... That is... I mean, it's not unfound... So, I mean, it's not, that's a little bit more scathing than I thought. But
so,
I just,
0% on Rotten Tomatoes, everyone.
To this day.
He is 0%.
0.0. All right, so, I mean, as far as the movie goes, Pat gets, you know, falls in love with Chris, and then they get engaged, and then they have an engagement party, and they invite Kyle and his wife, and Kyle, of course, is super obsessed trying to find out what Pat is, and he videotapes Pat at a karaoke during their engagement party.
Yeah.
And he submits that tape to a certain little TV show called America's Creepiest People.
Right.
Hosted by Arlene Sorkin.
Arlene Sorkin, the voice of Harley Quinn.
I haven't heard of Arlene Sorkin. I haven't heard that name in a while.
I've interviewed Arlene Sorkin.
Oh, really?
Actually. I did a phone interview with her a couple years ago.
Oh, you should have brought this up.
Well, I just did.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, when you interviewed her, but like, oh.
Oh, well, I had no idea at the time I interviewed her. I mean, because, you know, who the hell knows anything about Pat?
She probably would have downplayed that now that I think about it.
Yeah, no, I was interviewing her about her work on Batman the Animated Series, of course. But, she was very nice. And she also identifies herself by name. By her real name. She says, I'm Arlene Sorkin, host of America's Creepiest People. So, Kathy Griffin and Arlene Sorkin both playing themselves in this movie.
Yeah, that's so... That's, but yeah, I mean, the fact that the show's America's Creepiest People, like I mean, I can see how people could have a problem with that, because it's like, oh, this person...
Yeah, well, I mean, but Pat, all the gender stuff aside, is a creepy person.
Yeah.
And this the character... originated that way was because Julie Sweeney, before she went to Saturday Night Live, she was working as an accountant, I think at Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And there was like this creepy person in her office, like this guy who was like asking people out to lunch and had no idea how he was coming off to his coworkers.
Right.
And so Pat started as an impression of this coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And people were, and the feedback Julie Sweeney got was like, oh, he doesn't quite seem like a guy. You know, maybe you should make the gender ambiguous, and that'll be the joke. So it was her taking the mannerisms of this creepy coworker, and then she said, "I was just covering up my inability to play a guy well."
Oh, interesting.
and that's how Pat came about, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, very much. So
she kind of backed into the central joke of it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So that's where the joke come from. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, because I mean, I kind of had a theory. I mean, maybe we'll talk about it later, mm-hmm. like when we talk about like what the you know. I printed out some stuff that people who reviewed it after looking back on it said, and
right.
then Julia had some words about it. But
yeah, kinda, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm getting.
Let's dive in. What the hell?
You want to dive in right now?
Yeah. Why not?
All right. Cool. All right. So I printed out some stuff, and they did an interview with Jill Soloway, who created Transparent,
mm-hmm.
and during there was like a press tour during the Television Critics Association, and I think they asked Jill like when's the time on television or in a movie where you saw maybe like a trans or a character that upset you,
right?
And of course she brought up It's Pat, and her famous quote is saying that the It's Pat sketch was an awful piece of anti-trans propaganda.
Mm.
And I mean that's not wrong.
You see where she's coming from.
Yeah, I see where it's coming from. But then they interviewed Julia Sweeney. This all came out like maybe like 2 years ago. They mm-hmm. interviewed Julia Sweeney for the Chicago Sun-Times, and she said I probably don't disagree with Soloway actually. Pat didn't feel strange or weird or wrong, and frankly I never have thought of Pat as being transgender. That character is simply a gender we have yet to figure out. She also adds, none of the jokes were made at Pat's expense, but I can see how today that what we did is so next door to laughing at the person for not having clear gender characteristics. So I can see how it might seem like you're laughing at the person. And, you know, she goes on to say that she thinks that, you know, this sketch wouldn't fly in this day and age. You know, it seems so completely inappropriate at this point in time. It seems so dated now. However, being asked to do a Pat sketch made me think a lot about the character and realize that the time for Pat is in the past.
Yeah, I found an interview that Julie Sweeney did with Salon where she was Ooh. Talking about some of the gender issues that the Pat character brings up. She says, it started out as a complete joke. I wasn't trying to make a statement about sexuality or anything. I was really trying to figure out how to make this character. To me, the most interesting part of it was Pat was so oblivious to how other people were reacting to Pat. I was basing it on a couple people, and she tells the accountant story I just mm-hmm. told a few minutes ago. And let's see, she said that I didn't think it was that interesting that you didn't know if Pat was a man or a woman. To me, so what? But people felt very uncomfortable not knowing. People would ask me to tell them, but I didn't have an answer, and they couldn't stand that. Then I met this friend who asked if I'd do appearances as Pat. So I came to Chicago, and I did the St. Patrick's Day parade and made a lot of money, too. Then I started being Pat, and he would pitch me to mall openings. We still have some of these letters that said, we find it immoral to have a character that you can't tell if it's a man or a woman. There was this response from people who thought it was subversive, and the truth is, it is kind of subversive, but I only came to that as I experienced while being Pat. It wasn't something I thought about before I did it. And then she goes on a little later. She says, Matt Lauer asked me to come on the Today Show because he loves Pat. I hadn't done Pat in 20 years. I feel like the trans community wouldn't like it. The truth is, to me, the joke is that Pat is not transgender. I think on the Wikipedia page it says Pat is transgender, and I have to go on there and take that off, but I don't know how to. But okay. Identifies as a man or a woman, but you just don't know which. That's the joke of Pat. It isn't transgender, but I could see, for obvious reasons, why people would make that association and that it wouldn't be cool to do that. You would have to go around and constantly explain that. No, I am not making fun of transgender people. So Matt Lauer was like, you should write a sketch. So I called Christine, who was her writing partner with Pat. And I said, we should do something about a gay pride parade, and Pat's there and people are confused. You'd put Pat in that arena and then have Pat be sort of homophobic, like, oh, that's disgusting. The interviewer says, have a trans guy try to welcome him, and Pat's like, what are you doing? Exactly. Anyway, but then it got way too complicated, and we ended up not doing it. But I was worried about explaining Pat. I feel like you'd have to let people know the point of view. It just seems too complicated. People like Pat, but not enough that they're willing to invest a lot of thought into it.
Sounds about right.
So, yeah. So she's basically just talking about how she considers Pat's time to have passed, which I think is an accurate assessment.
That's very accurate. See, but what I thought, like, once I read, what I said, her interview and mm-hmm. In the rap, or the Chicago Sun-Times, I thought, oh, wait, because I guess people thought that the joke was everybody pointing and laughing at, you know, Pat, thinking mm-hmm. that Pat was like some sort of, you know, sort of freaky anomaly or whatever. But then I thought, well, maybe the joke is Maybe Pat's not the joke. Maybe we're the joke in the fact that maybe it's like a joke on society and our societal norms that we need
to... Like we want to put everybody in a category?
Yeah, when we want to compartmentalize every person and everything. Mm-hmm. And when you see something that you can't put a label on, that kind of drives you, you know, to the point of madness or just upsets mm-hmm, you. Mm-hmm. Maybe I thought maybe the It's Pat, you know, movie and the sketch was maybe a criticism on society. Is that, or am I thinking too much?
I can see that as an interpretation. I think you are probably overthinking it, though. I think the movie is just meant to work at that surface level,
okay.
And I didn't see it as something that was trying to make a deeper statement.
Okay. I thought that's what Julia Sweeney was going for, but then you read that, it's like, oh, maybe she...
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it was just what you see is what you get, you know?
All right.
So
I think I just made this movie better with my little... deep dive into thinking.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Julia Sweeney. Tweet at us. So as far as the movie goes, another appearance that happens from one of my favorite bands, the band Ween, makes a big appearance in this thing.
Yeah, that was weird. That was really out of left field.
It really was.
I had no idea they were in this movie, and it's just I don't know Ween well enough to recognize them.
Oh,
so
Ween's
great. They were just like two guys in a van.
Yeah, I mean, basically, so what happened in the movie now, like, after
Pat is featured on the TV show,
Creepiest People, the band, she's walking down, Pat's walking down the street, and then the van of Ween pulls up and says, mm-hmm. Hey, Pat, we're Ween. Want to be in our video? Like, literally, that's it. It's like, Gene Ween is Gene Ween.
You want to be in a concert tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't even ask if... Yeah, Pat can like play an instrument or sing, like just be there.
And Pat, and so that we have a Ween concert where Pat is there playing the tuba,
which they never mention at all in the movie up until just that point.
And Pat becomes obsessed with becoming famous after Pat sings karaoke at the engagement party with Chris.
Yeah, because that's where Pat does that. Pat figures, oh, I'm an entertainer.
Right.
So Pat is at the concert. Oh, also, Phil Lamar makes an appearance.
Phil Lamar, another person from the DC Animated Universe. Wow. Also somebody I got to interview.
All right. You know many famous people.
I wouldn't say that, but...
You hobnob with the elite.
I was very pleasantly surprised to see Mr. Phil Lamar there.
Oh, I know Dave Foley. I know Arlene Sorkin. La, la, la.
I am dropping a lot of names. I will give you that.
Better pick up all these names you dropped. But yeah, they never... Pat is playing the tuba during the Ween concert, which they never mentioned that Pat could play the tuba.
I don't know if they needed to set that up.
Yeah, but the fact that Pat can just play the tuba just kind of came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, I guess Pat plays this.
You want to know whether or not every movie character can play a tuba right at the beginning of the movie?
That's what I need. I need to know. What are your musical chops?
I would love that if just every movie gave you like whether or not a character could play the tuba.
Like, Beldar, can you play the tuba before I go review this movie? I need to know.
Sure.
Yeah, and of course, after the concert, you know, Pat's very happy. Pat tells everybody, oh, hey, everybody, I played with the Ween at Pat's, you know, apartment complex. And everybody's like, oh, that's disgusting. And I played with the Ween because that sounds like it.
You think they just put the band in just to make that pun, that joke?
It would not surprise me.
Yeah.
Get it? Because Ween sounds like penis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not like Ween very much.
Do you like, but you don't know, do you listen to, you don't listen to
I them. Haven't listened to much of them, but what I heard of their music in this movie, I did not like.
Oh, even though, we'll talk about it later. I'm sorry, I really like Ween.
I'm severely disappointed, Darren.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final episode of this podcast. I cannot work with John Trumbull. His hatred of Ween, his constant name dropping, I've had it up to here. I just can't. But yeah, it's just, so, and then after that, Pat becomes obsessed with trying to become famous, and it's,
yep.
And and also, another thing that happens is, you know, Kyle becomes very obsessed with trying to find out what Pat is.
Yep.
You know, he talks into like a recorder, his tape recorder, saying, mm-hmm. So I have such a strange combination of repulsion and attraction.
Yeah.
Such a
sphinx. And his wife leaves him.
His wife leaves him.
He steals Pat's laptop.
Oh, yeah. That laptop was...
Oh, it's a hilariously 1994 laptop.
Oh, my God.
that Pat has his her diary on.
Yes.
And, you know, Pat says, oh, this has all my inner secrets. And then and Kyle steals the laptop.
Right.
And he spends a good portion of the movie trying to hack into it. Pat says that the password's a word in the dictionary. So
yes.
Kyle literally goes through every word in the dictionary. And the password's the very last word in the dictionary.
Exactly.
And he finally unlocks the laptop, reads through the entire diary, and the diary still doesn't give any hint as to Pat's gender, and it makes Kyle finally snap.
Yes, and then he just totally, I think he calls into Pat, who has taken Kathy Griffin's job at the, what, do we even say what Kathy Griffin did?
She was like a radio advice person.
Then Pat. Yeah, so Kathy Griffin's at her job, and then Pat barges in saying, hey, I need a job, give me a job. Mm-hmm. And then Kathy's like, no, get away from me. You know, she calls security on Pat. But then as she leaves, Pat kind of just barges Pat's way into.
And takes a few calls.
And gets all like, you know, you need to grow up, loser.
And then Tim Meadows is like, oh, this is great. Let's put Pat on the air.
Yeah. And Tim Meadows just gives Pat a job. He gives Kathy Griffin job. Which another thing I noticed. Yeah. This is the third movie we're reviewing that has Tim Meadows in it.
Tim Meadows is all over this.
Meadows has been in three, and the fourth one
three
coming
movies
up.
In SNL, a row. Yeah.
That just snuck right. I was like, wow, Tim Meadows.
I don't know if he's going to be in next week's movie, but I'm looking forward to it now.
I'm chomping at the bit.
I'm always happy to see Tim Meadows. I mean, he's a very likable guy. He's a good performer. I enjoy Tim Meadows.
He's a precious jewel of a man.
Yes.
So, so then... Pat is the very kind of in your face, like insulting people who call in.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charles Rocket calls saying, oh, I have your laptop. Come and meet me.
Yeah.
And then Pat has to go meet Charles Rocket. Charles Rocket is totally snapped. He's dressed as Pat. And he's like, oh, I need to know what you are. Cause we're as one, we're intertwined. For me to get to know who you are, I get to know who I am. Like
he's gone around the deep end.
Yes, he's gone off around it and off it.
Yeah.
And of course, that leads to a big chase scene where they run into a building where Ween is performing, and you don't look interested in any of this.
You're just making me flash back to the movie, and it's not a comfortable place to be. Go ahead and explain the ending.
All right, yeah. So then they're running around in the rafters while Ween is playing in this concert, and then Pat somehow falls off the rafter, hooks Pat's self onto a hook.
See, it's tough, right?
It's very disgusting.
It must have been really tough to write this movie because you couldn't use personal pronouns for most of it.
Yeah.
You have two characters who are of indeterminate gender.
Yeah, it's like,
it's tough.
You gotta like unlearn
phrase things very carefully.
It's a lot of stuff you gotta unlearn. Yeah. So Pat hooks Pat's self onto a hook. Pat's pants falls down and rips off. And
revealing Pat's genitalia,
to
whatever it might be,
right to the band and the entire audience.
Yeah,
and the audience seems to like it and love it. And
yep,
yeah. And then, but Charles Rocket doesn't get to see as he's hauled off by security.
Yeah,
and
and they also have a climax in like a hall of mirrors.
Yes, yeah. There's like a hall of mirrors.
It's not exactly the lady from Shanghai, guys.
No, it is not. Right,
No.
And also, the relationship between Pat and Chris kind of devolves because, you know, Chris is upset with the way Pat is always so self-involved and whatnot. Like Pat has been throughout this whole movie, but I guess it reaches an apex that Chris decides to leave. And
Pat chases Chris.
Yeah.
Chris is like going overseas for some reason.
To Tibet.
Forget.
Like a spiritual journey, they said.
So whatever.
Yeah. And then Pat runs to Chris saying, I'm sorry. And that's enough to make Chris come back to Pat. And then they get married.
It's not a good movie, you guys.
It's not. It's not.
It's not a good movie.
It's not. And also at the very end, at the credits roll, you hear some voiceover and it's, Kathy Griffin got her job back at the... Did you hear this?
I think I missed this. I fast-forwarded through most of the credits.
At the credits, you hear a voiceover, and you hear Kathy Griffin got her job back as the radio talk show host, and she's taking a caller, and one of the callers is Kyle. No, she's interviewing Kyle, and Kyle says that you know, he enjoys dressing as a woman now.
Yeah.
And as a man. And like Kathy said, oh, so you're a transvestite.
I blocked that bit out.
Yeah. It's not a good.
That's
as we've. Yeah, there it is.
Do a little as problematic
bit. Yeah. As we've said before, it is not a good movie. This movie was directed by Adam Bernstein, who was a music video director until this is his first movie. Before this, he had done the music video for Violent Femmes, American Music. He did two videos for EPMD, So What You're Saying and You Got to Chill. He did Love Shack and Rome by B-52s.
Well, okay. Yeah.
And his big claim to fame, of course, the epic Baby's Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yes! Okay. he is redeemed in my mind.
Yeah. So, and the movie was written by Julia Sweeney, Steve Hippert, and Jim Emerson. Steve Hippert, you kind of know Steve Hippert because he was married to Julia Sweeney at the time. I believe they're divorced now.
But this movie was so bad, it broke up a marriage, people.
You don't know that
this
for
movie
sure.
broke up a marriage.
You don't know that. I mean, it probably did, but you probably best know Steve Hibbert. He was the Gimp in Pulp Fiction. That's right.
I had no idea. Now, interestingly, this movie came out the same year as Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
and Pulp Fiction, you may have forgotten, it also features Kathy Griffin
and
Julia Sweeney.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that Steve Hibbert played the Gimp.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
There was a whole bunch of
the intersections between It's Pat and Pulp Fiction.
It's
some of the critics said that Kathy Griffin and Julia Sweeney, they both starred in one of the best movies of 1994 and one of the worst movies of 1994.
And sure enough, they did. Yeah, and also I've read that like Quentin Tarantino did like a punch up of the script on this.
Yes,
too,
he did.
Uncredited.
He did. He actually, I found a Playboy interview with Quentin Tarantino.
Ooh.
Where he talked about they brought this up. They say you were hired to do a rewrite of It's Pat. As one now familiar with the perspiring androgyny from Saturday Night Live, is Pat a he or a she? And here's what Tarantino says.
Okay.
This is Tarantino in like 1994. He says,
okay.
The androgyny aspect is only part of Pat's appeal. What I love about the character is that Pat is so fucking obnoxious. To tell the truth, I don't know what Pat is, but I know what I want Pat to be. I want Pat to be a girl. There was only one sketch that Julia Sweeney, the actress who plays Pat, did on Saturday Night Live. They gave a clue to what Pat is. It was a sketch that Pat did with Harvey Keitel. They're stranded on a desert island and they have sex. And Harvey still doesn't know what Pat is. And the thing is, they kissed in it. At one point, they were thinking of taking the kiss out of the sketch. But Harvey, being Harvey, demanded that they keep it in. That there'd be no integrity without the kiss. So that was the first time we'd seen Pat in an intimate situation. A smooch. There's a certain way that you hold your head. The way you come in for a kiss. And sitting there watching it, I thought, Pat doesn't kiss like a guy. Pat kissed like a girl.
Wow,
so that's Quentin Tarantino.
Was Quentin here in the studio with this?
He was.
Wow. Pat,
I called Quentin in to come in and read his quote.
All right, you know Quentin Tarantino, you know Dave Foley,
I know people.
Just names everywhere.
That's where Quentin weighs in. A couple people who supposedly did rewrites on this movie, Bobby and Peter Farrelly.
What?
Yeah. According to an interview, this is on the IMDb trivia page. According to an interview with Michael DeLuca, Bobby Farrelly and Peter Farrelly worked on the script uncredited. And there were two cameos that ended up on the cutting room floor. Harvey Keitel as a priest and Jonathan Rickman as Pat's father.
Oh, interesting.
So
okay.
Well, and by the way, in the SNL sketches, Dana Carvey played Chris. Carvey was asked to reprise the role in the movie adaptation, but turned it down.
That's for the best.
Good call, Dana.
Well done. Well played, Carvey. Well played. So that's pretty much it for Pat. That's all I got. Pat's character in the movie, born in Middlesex, New Jersey. So
New Jersey. Another New Jersey. This and Coneheads. New Jersey. Didn't have any Jersey connections in Wayne's World or Blues Brothers, did we?
I don't believe so, no. That's all Chicago.
We need to continue to monitor this
to
see if there are any other New Jersey connections in the remaining SNL movies.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm chomping at the bit.
That we have to do. But
okay. And also, so on our Twitter page, at SNL Nerds Show, I put out the word that we're recording this today, and We heard from Bill Brasky at Bill Brasky.
Bill Brasky.
Bill Brasky.
Yeah.
Bill Brasky at 2620. He said, I remember Dave Foley saying once that the head of Disney at the time, Eisner, expressed reservations that they had made a lesbian love story, making the leap that Pat and Chris are both women, I guess. So that's his take on this movie. And I mean, I didn't, that's something to think about.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the whole point was that you didn't know what Pat and Chris were about, I guess. Eisner made that leap. So,
Go
tweet at Eisner, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Make your voice heard.
But
yeah, so. I mean, that's what we got. Not a good movie.
No.
Yeah,
no,
and they never really...
I mean, I didn't like the Coneheads movie much, but I could recognize things in there that were intended as jokes. A lot of... It's Pat. It was just like, are these even jokes? These don't seem like jokes. It was just... It's a very blah movie. It was just...
Well, I mean, I'll close it on this. I found a review of the AV Club that pretty much summed up everything we've said and everything I've felt about it. So they did this review back in 07. It's Pat the Movie gave a big screen close-up to one of SNL's most reviled fixtures, a character so shrill and obnoxious it could easily pass for a vicious parody of recurring characters. On Saturday Night Live, Julie Sweeney's androgynous human question mark hit exactly one note, the spine-shivering screech of nails on a chalkboard. In her signature character's sole feature film vehicle, Sweeney hits that note over and over for 75 agonizing minutes. It's Pat is obnoxious, at least partially by design. Behind the lead character's simpering, repulsive exterior lies an equally repulsive interior. The film's protagonist is ugly and socially, but deep down, he/she's really a selfish, callous, narcissistic jerk. Charles Rocket throws himself into the role of a neighbor who develops a sick psychosexual obsession with Sweeney.
Nice alliteration.
Yeah, right? With scary intensity. The scenes of Rocket's devolving into madness and obsession feels like something out of a Todd Solondz movie, all gray and ugly and hopelessly perverted. After a while, It's Pat all but gives up on being funny and settles for being as weird and disturbing as Rocket's subplot. And then he mentioned Ween and Camille Paglia.
Was interesting. Yeah.
I forget. I missed Camille Paglia.
She made a cameo in the movie.
Right. But they're saying that It's Pat is terrible in a vaguely geek chic sort of way. Then the writer goes on to say, a lot of the films I've written about are fascinating today for mainly of the reasons they failed initially, but It's Pat hasn't benefited at all from age, in part because it's so claustrophobic and limited in scope. Yet the film retains a queasy kind of appeal. It's simultaneously intriguing and repulsive, a would-be cult curio not even the most indulgent cult could love. Yeah, that's the thing about this movie. It's like one of those movies that's not good, bad, or even like good, bad enough to be like a cult movie. It's just it's just bad.
Oh, by the way, something we didn't mention before was there was a tie-in book. Jilly Sweeney co-wrote a book to coincide with the film's release titled It's Pat, My Life Exposed. Pat makes it through the entire 96-page book without revealing the character's gender.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember that.
So that's listed on the Wikipedia page.
Because, I mean, this movie came out, I was in high school, and I kind of remember that book coming out, and I was like, thanks.
Here's another interesting quote from Julie Sweeney about the movie. She wrote on her Pat website. I did not check to
There's
see
a Pat website?
Apparently, there was at the time she wrote this. I didn't
I'm
check to see
it's
if it's...
I'm assuming it's probably on like...
I didn't see if it's still functioning.
It's on Lycos or something?
She says, I wrote It's Pat with Jim Anderson and Steve Hibbert. We had a great time writing and a lot of fun making the film. The movie didn't do well at the box office, not by a long shot. In fact, It's Pat became a popular example of a film so despised that it got a 0% Rotten Tomatoes rating. I guess in that way, it's sort of a badge of honor. But I can't help it. I love this film. It has so many people in it who I love and loved. Many are dead. Charlie Rocket, who played Kyle, and Julie Hayden, who played his wife, who died of cancer a couple of years after the film premiered.
Oh, man.
My dad, who played the priest who married us, and my brother Mike, who had one line at the wedding shower of Pat and Chris. Oh. And there are so many good friends in the film, too. Kathy Griffin and Dave Foley and Kathy Najimy and Tim Stack and Tim Meadows and the band Ween. We had so much fun together. Oh, yeah. And by the way, this...
Kathy Najimy's in, too. We forgot to mention that.
Yeah, yeah. She's has a bit part as a shopkeeper who Pat creeps out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie, Julie Sweeney, she said that this movie flopped on a Friday, and on Sunday, her brother Mike contacted her and let her know that he had cancer and he didn't have insurance. And this, and she, and her brother Mike ended up moving in with her not long after Julie Sweeney found out that she had this rare form of cervical cancer.
Jesus.
And her, I believe her parents were living there with her too. And this all ended up becoming. Material for Julie Sweeney's one-woman show, God Said Ha.
Yeah.
Which, and she's done a couple other one-woman shows since then. So in a weird way, this led, all this misfortune in her life led to her to a bit of a career reinvention or a resurgence for her.
I thought you were going to say, in a weird way, this movie gave her cancer.
I wasn't going to go that far.
Oh, okay.
I went as far to say that it broke up her marriage, and, you know, I, of course, have no idea if that is accurate, but...
it's a good chance it did.
I don't think it would help.
Yeah.
I don't think writing a flop movie together is a good thing for any marriage.
Yeah.
But
that don't bring you guys closer.
But this movie
it's I don't know, I'm speechless about what else to say.
I was dreading this one, and it
I was too, like for all the reasons we listed, and just we pulled it off like a Band-Aid.
Yeah, and actually, like, this is a short movie. Like I said, it was an hour, 17 minutes long.
But it didn't feel that short.
It felt so long. I decided to make a note of every time I checked the counter on the computer file I was watching. First time I checked the counter was 14 minutes in.
Wow. 14 minutes?
Yeah. It's like, how much longer? And then I checked it again at 23 minutes in. 34 minutes in, 41 minutes in, 50 minutes in, 55 minutes in, 61 minutes in, 68 minutes in, 70 minutes in, and 73 minutes in. So wow. I could not wait for this thing.
Oh my God.
I just thought it might be amusing to note that I was checking it approximately every 10 minutes to see like, how much more of this
is done. A watch pot never boils, Trump.
Yeah, well, I need this was one of the few things that was entertaining me during this hour and 17 minutes.
That's the best. That's something to write in a review.
But you know what? Hey, speaking of reviews, the SNL Nerds has gotten another review.
We did?
We did on Apple Podcasts.
Woohoo!
We got a review that was left on Monday from DeBurls. The headline is, it's a 5-star review. Thank you very much. It says, solid reviews and entertaining. Darren and John have great chemistry with each other, do good research into each episode, and both give their honest thoughts on a show they are both passionate to talk about. Kudos, gentlemen of the Saturday night.
Hey!
Thank you, DeBurls.
Thanks, DeBurls.
That was very nice of you. And if you want to leave more reviews like that, or reviews of a different sort even on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to the podcasts.
Yeah, leave it up there.
Yeah, please, you know, give us a rating, give us a review. Yeah. That really does help us out.
Even if we're doing something wrong, you can let us know.
Yeah, no, we're open to the criticism. If we did something hideously wrong in this episode, which we probably did, let's just give ourselves a little problematic bell.
If you feel like John's dropping too many names, let us know. you didn't tell your Dave Foley story.
Let me tell the Dave Foley story.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, this was, we were celebrating my friend Frank's birthday.
Okay.
And we went over to Maxwell's in Hoboken.
Oh, nice.
Which, it's a really cool music venue, sadly closed now. Mm. If you've ever seen the video for Bruce Springsteen's Glory Days, that was shot at Maxwell's.
Whoa, really?
And, yeah, and they always had like a lot of cool bands there. Okay. And we were celebrating my friend Frank's birthday, and we were seeing one of his favorite bands, which was Elvez, the Mexican Elvis.
I've never heard of this. Elvez.
Elvez. Elvez.
It's clever.
E-L, new word, V-E-Z.
It's clever.
Very funny, very, very entertaining.
Okay.
You'll see a show. And one of his backup singers was dating Dave Foley at the time.
I think one of his backup singers was Dave Foley.
No. But we were waiting. In the outer part in the restaurant bar area to get into like the back room to see the band. Okay. And Dave Foley was there waiting with us, and we were like ended up chatting with him a bit.
And we
exchanged a few words with him, and then he was like, "Oh, I should introduce myself. I'm Dave." And I was like, "That is so wonderfully Canadian that you don't assume that we know who you are." And we were all like, "Oh, you know, no, we know who you are."
When was this? Like how
this? That's part of the story.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. I'm going to get ahead.
So as it turns out, this was in September of 2001. So this was not long after September 11th. This was within like 2 weeks of September 11th. I don't remember the exact date of the concert, but
whoa.
So it was very fresh in everyone's mind, of course. Yeah. And we chatted with Dave more after the show, and we hung out with him a little bit. And of course, the conversation turns to that because that's what's on everybody's mind right now. And we're talking about how do you rebuild? Do you rebuild? You know, all that. So it became like a very real conversation. And at the end of the evening, Dave Foley like hugged all of us in our group. And like we walked out and I said to Frank, I was like, if you told me this morning that I would have been hugged by Dave Foley after...
after 9/11.
Yeah, so super nice guy. Very, very nice guy. We had a good talk. And he actually later married that backup singer, became, I believe, his second ex-wife.
Okay. All right.
I know like Dave Foley has had his money problems over the years, and I think that's part of the reason he did this movie was I know in like one of his marriages he got just killed with the alimony.
God, if you listen to there was an episode of WTF with Mark Maron where Dave Foley was on it. I highly recommend you listen to that.
You mentioned that online on like Facebook or on Twitter.
Because like there's. Because he got married to his first wife in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I don't... Like, you have to listen to the episode because it's really interesting. But there's, like, some weird Canadian rules when it comes to divorce where you just... Mm-hmm. He basically... He even said, like, I had to take every job I could because, like, I just had to keep giving this person money because of the way the laws are structured in Canada. Like, every movie you've seen me in, like, after I got divorced, I pretty much had to take because, like, I was just in constant debt and I just had to... give this person all my money.
Yeah, I hope he got out from under that.
I think he finally did. If you listen to that episode after listening to our episode, of course.
Yeah,
but like it was a really fascinating episode.
But Dave Foley is a hell of a nice guy. And
he's the bee's knees.
Yeah, I remember at one point we went up to the bar together to get refills like around the same time, and it was just with him and I went, okay, I'm just gonna like gush for a minute, and then I'm going to go back to treating you like a normal person. I told him, like, you know, News Radio is like one of my all-time favorite sitcoms.
Underrated.
I've seen episodes of that like a half a dozen times. They still make me laugh. And he was like, oh, well, thank you very much. And, you know, the cast, they're all still good friends. And and he, so nice. So nice.
Yeah, I
so
think Dave, he was on like Joe Rogan's podcast and stuff.
Yeah,
and all that.
Dave Foley, very, very nice guy.
He's a good guy. It's always good when you meet nice people.
Yeah. And
if I may name drop one.
Yes,
time,
please.
There was one time where years and years ago, Where I met Henry Winkler.
He's supposedly very, very nice.
He is a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But it happened. The way it happened is, I think I said before in this podcast, I used to write for my college newspaper. And this around the time The Waterboy came out, my college newspaper, we got like a screening at the Planet Hollywood in the city.
Ooh.
But it's like during the afternoon, like where they let all like the college newspaper writers and bloggers to see the movie. But it was, you know, it was super nice. It was super cool. They gave us food, which for any college kid, that's all.
Free food. That's a dream.
That's all. I will repaint your house if you give me a pizza. Back in those college days, I will do whatever. So then after they gave us food, then actually Adam Sandler and his crew came out and they answered all everybody.
Adam Sandler came out. Oh, what was Adam Sandler like? Did you talk to Adam Sandler?
Oh, he's so nice. Oh. He's so nice.
Oh,
what about you?
Was he nice?
I think. Oh. This is so ridiculous.
What was Henry Winkler like? Tell us the Henry Winkler story. We need to know the Henry Winkler story, Darren.
I met Adam Sandler. He was super nice, and he took pictures with everybody. And then they invited all of us, you know, college writers, to the premiere. But, like, we would be, like, standing behind, like, the the velvet rope type of thing.
Okay.
And like, you know, when people come
keeping out the rabble.
Yeah, keeping out the rabble. And when like people come in and walk down the aisle, we could ask them questions if they want to answer it. Oh, they could. But like where they placed us was kind of like on like the lower end of the velvet rope.
Sure.
So
Yeah.
So like we weren't like, you know, near where people where the celebs stand and stuff.
Uh-huh.
We were like kind of on the way down to the stairs to the theater.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's
and there were only a few people that actually stopped to talk to us. One of them was Molly Shannon.
Oh, nice.
Who was with Sherry O'Terry.
Oh, cute.
And they were super nice.
Uh-huh.
The other person, Henry Winkler. And that
Fonz?
The Fonz. And he stopped to talk to me for like 3 minutes.
Nice.
He was like, hey, how you doing? Where's it going? Oh, you write for the Queens College newspaper? That's cool. Like, he was in, he didn't have to talk to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just some, you know, some peon from Queens just writing a paper. But he like he engaged me like a real person.
Yeah.
And that's why Henry Winkler is an amazing human being.
Yeah, he seems like a sweetheart. He was at a con I went to last year. He was seen.
All right,
so nice,
you know Henry Winkler.
No, I didn't meet him. I okay. just saw him like from a distance because he had like a line of people, of course.
Okay.
But he seemed very engaged and very friendly with everybody.
Yeah, no, he's
very nice. Not like that jerkaloo Ferrigno.
Oh wow! You have a Ferrigno story?
I do, but it's not very good. I'll save it for some other time.
Right. That's for Patreon.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We'll record the Ferrigno story separately.
Yeah. But yeah, so Henry Winkler, hell of a guy.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, and that's our episode. I guess
that's our episode. I mean, we are pro Dave Foley. We are pro Henry Winkler.
Yes,
we are not pro It's Pat the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie is even hard to find, too. It's not even, like, DVD. I mean, there's probably a DVD and stuff and streaming, but it's,
no.
It's
I mean,
hard
we,
to...
We did not want to shell out money to
no.
see the It's Pat, because then your name goes on some sort of weird list.
Yeah,
we had to find other means.
We won't get into that.
Other means, but, you know, we know people. It's possible.
We know Dave Foley and Arlene Sorkin.
That's right.
So that's it. So thanks for listening, and, of course, we always have the Patreon. If you want to donate money to us,
you can go to non-productive.com. You can donate to the Patreon there, and you can indicate that the SNL Nerds is the show that you are contributing to.
But
there are other wonderful shows on the non-productive network, and we encourage you to check them out and see what you like.
If you're into comic books, check out Near Mint. If you're into the Honeymooners, check out the new Honeymooners podcast. There's like many, many shows on this beautiful, wonderful.
That's true.
Network.
That's true. And also, fantastic. If you are just fascinated with us, the SNL Nerds, you got to know more about the SNL Nerds. And I need more SNL Nerds content in my life.
Ugh.
What can we do about this?
Well,
where can you go?
If you want to, you can go to our Twitter page at SNL Nerds Show. You can try and steal my laptop if you want to know more about me.
Sure,
or if
sure.
you don't, if you want to go through all that, you can just follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible, DarinCredible.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, but I barely use it. You can follow me on there at Trumbull Comic.
Yes.
And we also have an SNL Nerds Facebook page. So check us out there. Follow us. Give us a like. And, you know, share us around when we post the new episode.
Yeah.
We post an episode every Monday. And we like that. So word of mouth.
Yes.
It's a good thing.
Yes. Grassroots. Spread the word. We're trying to make this thing grow and take over the world.
That's right. That's right.
World domination. That's the final.
Yes.
That's the end game.
The world needs to know our opinions of the It's Pat movie.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And what are we doing next week? We are like dead in the middle of our SNL summer movie marathon.
Stuck in the middle with you.
What are we doing next week? How can we possibly top It's Pat the movie?
Oh, we can top it.
How?
A little film called Stuart Saves His Family. Right?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
One of my least favorite SNL supporting characters.
In a movie.
Someone I got sick of spending 5 minutes with. I get to spend 90 minutes or whatever with.
Christmas came early.
Wow.
That's right. You're welcome, America.
We are in the...
We're in the doldrums.
We are in the tough phase.
We're deep in the shallows. We're in the shallows now.
This is
in the shallow.
But if we can survive Pat, I feel confident that we can survive. Stuart Saves His Family.
That's right. This makes us stronger, tougher.
That's right.
That which does not kill us.
We're going to be like the $6 million man at the end of the summer.
Oh my God, we're going to be busting through walls and everything.
That's right.
Ripping doors off
hinges.
Rebuild
us. Make us stronger. Faster.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na- I don't know the theme song. I just kind of hummed along to what you
really?
Did. Yeah, I kind of remember it. But
that's one of the best opening credits ever.
Better than Knight Rider? I don't
yes,
think.
Yes, it is. Ooh. So better than Knight Rider.
Oh.
So better than Knight Rider.
I don't.
By the way, I this last week I went down like a YouTube hole of like opening credits. I don't know. I have watched the opening credits of Hardcastle McCormick more than a healthy person should.
Wow, that is.
I don't know why I'm doing this. I just really dig the theme song. I think
you might need to get out more.
Yeah, very possibly.
Yeah,
very possibly. Okay. That's a problem I'm going to work on.
Yeah,
going to work on improving myself.
And then watching Stuart Saves His Family.
Watching Stuart Saves His Family is not really going to be a part of that, but
right.
Working on improving myself after I watch Stuart Saves His Family.
It's a new year, new Trumbull.
So tune in next week and see how we do with that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So, everything's coming up to Milhouse.
It's going to be a thing.
It's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.